Blog Talk Radio.
Playing Sports City Chefs from Amazon Music.
Yeah.
Back, listen, enjoy the vibe. Sip something, light it up, enjoy the ride. Cause the Sports City Chefs is on the night. In the kitchen cooking up, they on the rise.
Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs,
Yes, Lord, we got a brand new president. Joe Biden, we riding, I pray you heaven sent. Word from the wise, my people stay ahead of
come on.
I've been relevant, trying to survive the elements. It ain't no love in these streets, these dudes telling it. Case go from cold to hot, state evidence. Kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room. Cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again.
Yes, yes, yes. The villain is back with the baseball buffet. I can't believe we're back on. Call in number 929-477-2759. We are with you for the next 58 minutes, 15 seconds, talking baseball and the baseball buffet, the debut episode for the season of the Major League Baseball campaign 2021 edition. I am the villain himself, Barry Jordan. I'm here hosting, holding down the switchboard. On the other side of the glass, I got Dave in the house. Dave, what's up, brother?
What's going on? I can't believe it's another opening day. One of the most exciting days of the year. Here we go.
It's going to be fun. This is the first day that I either worked or went to class or something for opening day. I've always taken opening day off. This is the first day I actually worked, but I didn't work. I was working my TV and watching the game. So, oh, well, I don't care if my boss is in.
Sounds like you know your boss is listening.
Yeah, exactly. I hope she's not listening. If she is, I worked all day, I promise you. And I got Nate in the building. Nate, what's going on, brother?
How are we doing, gentlemen? I am right there with you that this is normally my own personal holiday. Work kind of got in the way, and I had to sign on and actually do substantive work today, but I had the baseball games on in the background the entire time, even though today was kind of a tease of an opening day for me since my Orioles got rained out at least 5 hours before a first pitch was even supposed to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like that that old Family Guy is like, and the start of the baseball season and the season is over. kind of funny, but
we're digging on the Mets already, really?
No, not yet. We'll get to them in a minute. But I also got Big E, Eric Gross in the house. Eric, what's going on? How you feeling this evening?
What's up, gentlemen? I'm feeling great. It's one of my favorite times of the year, opening day.
Absolutely. We got a lot of fun to be had here. So really quickly, I'll run through the scores. My Yankees, my beloved Yankees, took a L today, first game of the season, 3-2, lost to the Blue Jays at home. The Indians downed by the Tigers, 3-2 as well in their opening day game. The Brewers came back and upset T.P. Timeless's Twins. Lorenzo Cain scored the winning run in the 10th. We'll talk about the extra innings. Yankees and the Twins both went to extra innings with that rule still in place, and the Phillies as well. Phillies won a 3-2 game. I see a theme, 3-2 a lot today. The Pirates down the Cubs 5-3 in regular fashion, not in extra innings. The Padres down the Diamondbacks 8-7. They had jumped on Bumgarner early and held on for the win. The Rockies beat the Dodgers in their first game as defending champs. I wouldn't make a habit of that, but, you know, it is what it is. Rockies get their first win of the year. Cardinals look impressive against the Reds. Schmidt and Arenado, the 1-2 punch that we alluded to last Tuesday, looking good in their first game together in the regular season. Arenado getting his first hit as a member of the Cardinals. The Rays beat the Marlins in the battle for supremacy in Florida. Fans that are living in Florida but actually Yankee fans. So the Rays won that game 1-0. The Royals in a slugfest beat the Rangers. Maybe it's the Chiefs beat the Texans 14-10. Looked like a football score to me. And games yet to be played, the White Sox, Angels, Astros, Athletics, Giants, Mariners. And postponed because of rain, not because nobody wants to see them play, the Red Sox and the Orioles. But no, I'm kidding. And the Mets and Nationals also was postponed, not because of weather, but because of stupidity. So that's where we'll start the show today. The Nationals and the Mets had to postpone the game because of COVID tracing. A couple, I think it was at least four players were in quarantine, and one staff member was in possible quarantine because of tracing because of COVID. So that game was postponed. They're not going to make it up tomorrow, that's what I've heard. It sounds like they're going to try to just make it up later and try to get the game in as scheduled on Saturday in Washington. So, Nate, I'll start with you. The Mets Nationals didn't get a game in today for opening day because of COVID. What were your thoughts?
I think, and I haven't seen that the Nationals have announced who the player was that tested positive yet, but I think that the Nationals as an organization and that player in particular deserve all the shame and all the scorn that can possibly be heaped on them. All through spring training, Major League Baseball conducted just shy of 80,000 COVID tests, and they had 33 players test positive. Because these guys have figured this out. We've been living with this pandemic for over a year. Sports leagues, leagues across all sports have figured out the protocols they need to put in place. They've got the testing. They've got the, you know, the bubble set up. They know how to keep their guys healthy. It all comes down to the players simply following through. And, dude, this is your livelihood. And not only have you ruined your livelihood by postponing opening day, you caused the entire roster of two other major league teams to have to sit and miss out on probably one of the most celebrated sports days of the sports calendar. What a bonehead. It is completely, completely inexcusable, especially the amount of time that we've had to deal with this and that Major League Baseball has had to get this under control. Inexcusable. That's all I have for the Nationals. They're a joke.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
it's very unfortunate,
you know,
what happened. Dave, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, Nate, I completely agree with you that it's an embarrassment. I think that's another word I'd want to use. But play a little bit of a devil's advocate here. You know, we don't know all of the facts. It's it is possible that, you know, this disease is sneaky. It's very pervasive. It's gotten around. And if one player gets it, once you're in the bubble, it's going to spread. And I think they did the right thing by tarnishing their own opening day and putting the kibosh on it. But I do just want to make one quick point that opening day itself is a little bit of a farce that the season doesn't start in Cincinnati every year. But we can touch on that later.
You are right, Dave. I mean, and there's also the possibility, I don't know what testing Major League Baseball is using, if it's the rapid testing or the more thorough testing. So it is, obviously, there is the possibility that it is a false positive. But the fact that they have gone to these, and I do agree with you that they did do the right thing by postponing the game. And I really just think it's more on the player of, like, how do you even put yourself in that position?
Yeah, absolutely. Very irresponsible. I hope it's a false positive, and hopefully a couple of days will quell it. But, yeah, it's not looking good. Eric, I'm going to come to you, and then I got a caller in queue that I want to bring in. So, Eric, let me get your thoughts on the Nationals and the Mets postponing opening day because of COVID.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to mimic what was just said. You know, it's pretty ridiculous. So, you know, I'm just going to leave it at that. People, you know, we saw fans back in the stands, so things are going great. So to, you know, cancel an opening day game on a false positive is pretty ridiculous in my eyes. But I wanted to get something out there really quick to see if you guys saw that interesting thing that happened right here in Colorado with Cody Bellinger hitting a home run, or Ramel Tapia caught the ball and then dropped it over the wall, which would have been a home run, but he runs back. Justin Turner passes him to tag, and it ends up being an RBI single because of that. Cody Bellinger was called out because he had passed the runner. So that was pretty interesting.
Oh, wow. I didn't see that.
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I just saw that
Little League
before we came on.
Yep. Yeah, so it should have been a home run. They both folded. Justin Turner went back to first base, and Bellinger passed him, and yep, it was a mess, but they gave the Dodgers an RBI single out of it, which should have been a two-run home run. But he was called out since he passed Justin Turner, so pretty interesting.
Yeah, first game of the year, what are you going to do, right?
Yep.
Yeah, exactly, but let me hit the switchboard, bring in a caller from the 404. We got Naj in the building talking a little baseball with us. Naj, how you feeling this evening?
I'm good, man. What's up, everybody? Good to hear everybody talking baseball.
Absolutely. The baseball season is upon us. I'm sure you're a Braves fan in the ATL, right?
Yeah, you know me, man. Friend and fan to no one. Sometimes I'm a Braves fan. Other times, a mercenary fan. That's pretty much me.
Okay. I listened, and just to be fair, on the Roundtable show a couple of days ago, I did pick the Braves to make the World Series, and I picked Acuna to get the MVP. I'm high on the Braves this year. I like what I see, so just got to throw that out there. I don't know if you saw what happened with the Nationals and the Mets getting postponed because of COVID. I don't know if you want to throw in your two cents into the hat, or we can move on to other topics this evening.
No, as far as COVID, I think you guys covered all the ground there, but I'll throw the other outlier today. Which was cold weather. We had a lot of games that it affected the pitching. It affected the hitting. We had the Baltimore game postponed. So weather is an issue. And for all you gamblers out there who thought Kyle Hendricks in a cold weather situation against Detroit was an easy – well, not Detroit. Pittsburgh was an easy win. Yeah. Kyle Hendricks set my money on fire today. So that'll be my first complaint. But, yeah, man, glad baseball is back.
Hey. Well, hey, that's your National League rookie of the year favorite coming through.
Yeah, exactly. Nas, did you put any futures down this year? Do you do futures?
No, not normally for baseball, man, because, you know, it's so much variance in baseball. There's no telling how things can go, so I typically stay away from it. I need to at least see a quarter of the season.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I haven't done it, obviously, because we can't gamble in Connecticut, but I was watching some shows, and they had some future bets, some interesting ones with, you know, obviously win totals, you know, some of the pitching matchups and MVP, like, odds and stuff like that. And I think Freeman was actually up there as one of the MVPs, so very interesting. But, yeah, switching gears, since everybody got their two cents, I definitely wanted to hit on some of the big news that came out of Mets camp that didn't involve the game. It was their star shortstop, Francisco Lindor, inking a 10-year, $341 million extension to remain with the New York Mets. Let's go, Mets. You know, after all the speculation that he wanted $400 million, even Pete Alonso chiming in that give that man $400 million, they settled on a contract that is to be the richest per year salary for a shortstop, and beat the Fernando Tatis Jr. contract by $1 million. So he got 340. Francisco Lindor got 341. So I'll kick it over to you, Dave. I'll start over here since you were high on the Mets this year. You're a closet Met fan this year. Did you hear about the contract, and what did you think about the Mets inking their man that they traded for in the offseason?
Well, you had to see this one coming with Steve Cohen and his frequent tweeting, if you're a Twitter person. I just don't think it was a surprise at all. The day they traded for him, you knew part of his own reputation was on the line, and I think this is sort of a setting the table for the franchise, not just Lindor, not just the season, but this is his first true thumbprint on the franchise. He bought it. Everybody knows he's got the money. They just had the Wilpons. The franchise just went through the Madoff situation. Still fresh in everybody's mind, somehow managed to get a World Series, you know, amidst all of this, less than 5-6 years ago. But it's a hungry fan base. He had to give him that contract. I think it was right on the mark for value for somebody of that caliber coming into a big market. You know, that's one thing I think as a Yankee fan we've seen them go away from in really the 2010s, and now they're a little bit more back to it, which is not just signing the player but making a statement. That Gerrit Cole contract was a statement. This Francisco Lindor contract is a statement. We're here to win. He really puts himself out there as a fan. I think this is a total win for the fans, for the team that they put on the field, and the owner. I think there's something to be said of that too.
Yeah, I mean, it sends a message not only that they got that $1 million more that we're that to me, not signing the guy that you traded for and bringing keeping him until he's about 37 years old. I think the extra $1 million is a thumb to Tatis Jr. and saying, you know, we got the better player, we're gonna pay more, but we're gonna pay that money. Gone are the days where we're gonna be cheap. So I totally agree with you, Naj. I don't know if you saw the Francisco Lindor contract, the extension that he got from the New York Mets, but I'd love to get your opinion on what transpired late last night, early this morning.
Yeah, well, let me say first, we, as the American taxpayer, we kind of chipped in on this bill, if you know anything about Sachs and where he got his money from and some of the things he did. Yeah, man, great signing. You had to do it. This is the reason you brought him over. So you weren't going to sit there and quibble, you know, around the edges about what he should get. And please believe he's going to earn that money. Every public relations event, every nonprofit, every baby that needs to be kissed and hand that needs to be shaken, he's going to be doing it because that comes with this kind of money, that kind of responsibility. So let's see how he shows up and performs. But, yeah, this was the deal that had to be done. Do I think he's better than Tatis, though? No, personal opinion.
No, I think they're right neck and neck. I think Tatis is probably a little better. But, you know, you can't do wrong with that guy. He's a tremendous defender, a really good hitter, he's a good person. He's a good kid. So I like the signing. Nate, I'll come to you. Francisco Lindor, 10 years, $341 million inked this really early this morning, late last night. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I hope for the sake of the Mets franchise that you're not staring down another Bobby Bonilla deal. That's all I have to say about that. I agree with everything you guys are saying. It's a deal that needed to be done. He is going to be the face of the franchise for the next 2 or 3 years. The problem is he's 27. He signed until he's 37, and he relies in no small part on his legs, and those go first. So that's an awful lot of money to be paying to a guy in the twilight years. And there are guys that are earning these big contracts, and I just, for most of them, I hope they work. But as an Orioles fan, I have to sit here and look at the monstrosity, disgrace that is the Chris Davis contract from 2016, and you just really don't want to see that happen, especially to a franchise like the Mets, who already did this and were the, you know, the brunt of the sports world jokes with Bobby Bonilla Day, which was my favorite holiday, but now I can't celebrate it because of the Chris Davis deal. it is interesting, and it is almost kind of a shame that, you know, because he beat out the Tatis Jr. deal by $1 million, but he's so much older than Tatis, so it's forever going to be linked there. And he just, like, it's almost like Lindor now has handcuffed himself to Tatis, but he's so much older. It had to be done. the Mets got it done, and I guess it's just, you know, hey, we'll pay now. We don't get what we can out of it now, and I guess they don't mind paying the premium for him when he's 37. But, man, that's going to be ugly, potentially, in 2031.
Yeah, but that's like 10 years away, and I don't, listen, it's the move you got to make. And to be fair, Bobby Bonilla is a great day, July 1st. I'm wondering if they sign that contract off and just pay him, you know, the rest of his money so they don't have to, you know, the holiday could be dead. But I feel like that's just an enduring day for Mets fans. Dave, you had something?
Oh, I was going to say, I always forget about that Chris Davis deal, and I don't understand why teams do that. I'll never get it. I'm a Devils fan, and I think they gave Ilya Kovalchuk like a 13 or 17 year contract at some point. I don't understand the rationale. I feel bad for you, man.
Yeah, I think
they do it because they're a small market team. Now, if the Orioles were in New York, right, it wouldn't matter. But the Orioles, you know, they lost 3/4 of their market to the Nationals. So they're like, hey, we can maybe make up this money later. But that's why they do it. And it always, always, always bites them in the end.
Yeah, long-term, absolutely. Incentive. I mean, the Orioles didn't play today, but I think Chris Davis still struck out. So, you know.
Four times.
Yeah, four times. That's the golden sombrero. Eric, I'll come to you with the Francisco Lindor contract, 10 years, $341 million per, you know, giving him the highest average for a shortstop in the league history. What are your thoughts?
You know, it's a great signing for him. Like you said, Billen, this guy's a great kid, great player. I think Tatis is maybe a better hitter than him, but by far Lindor is one of the best defenders in all of baseball, so hands down. Great signing for the Mets. You know, you got to lock up your assets when you do a trade like this. You don't want to have the risk of him leaving and it have be a rental-type situation. So, and the Mets are trying to win. They're trying to build a winner. They haven't had anything to cheer about for a very long time there. You know, they had that deal where they got caught up in the Madoff deal, you know what I mean? And that completely destroyed the team's ability to get contracts and do stuff like that. So I'm glad to see him rebounding from that and trying to build a winner over there. And we'll just have to see. Hopefully it pans out. A lot of these players, like we saw with Bryce Harper, he got this big money payday and completely flopped. He didn't even make the All-Star game last year, you know what I mean? Batted .267. Mm-hmm. So this is a guy that was supposed to be up there with Mike Trout, clearly is not. So, but this is what I like about baseball here, folks, is there's loyalty. Unlike in the NFL, players are leaving constantly. In the major leagues, we see loyalty and rewarded. You get players that, you know, get to stay on teams for an extended period of time. They try to keep teams together and players together. So that's what I really like. So, you know, I'm happy for him. It's a good thing for the Mets. We'll just have to see if he can keep producing, you know what I mean? So other than that, it's a great deal to be done.
Now, well, guaranteed contracts help out with that. And, you know, but I mean, small market teams don't get to keep their guys, the Royals, the Rays, the Pirates,
Baltimore.
It's amazing, if I can just say real quick, the Tampa Bay Rays have just amazed us all year in, year in, year out. This team is a competitor. They have one of the best farm systems in baseball, so they get all these great prospects coming up, and they've been able to sustain and weather storms and be a contender each year. So I'd like to see them get more popular and be able to hang on to some of these guys because, you know, I like watching the Rays. They're an exciting team to watch.
Well, step one, and that's going to be getting out of that eyesore that is Tropicana Field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I honestly think, to be honest with you, I think it's getting out of Tampa. I like Tampa. I like the area. But they don't support that team unless they're in the playoffs. And even when they're in the playoffs, they really don't support them. So it's kind of hard. It's, you know, you're right. They have a great farm system, but they can't afford to keep their players. They traded away Snell. They had to watch Morton go to Atlanta. So, you know, it's unfortunate. Sometimes they hit on the right ones. Like, they, you know, they let guys go just before they start to decline. But, you know, if they had kept some of those cores around, that's a team that can really contend. So it's unfortunate. Yeah. But
you have to.
Yeah, I'm eager to see what Wander Franco can do and if they can keep him around.
He is going to absolutely punish baseball.
Yep. I think so, too.
Exactly.
One thing I think you have to give some credit to, though, is the is that scouting team down in Tampa. I mean, they
absolutely
just keep churning out the best players. They keep finding them very young. That's one thing. Eric, I wanted to go back to one thing you had said about the Bryce Harper deal. You immediately sounded extremely sour on it. And let's just say something comes back up with Tatis. His injury kind of persists. You know how, you know, tears and soft muscle things can sometimes come back. I personally don't see that Bryce Harper deal as badly as you do. I understand last year was terrible. I don't know how much stock I put into a 60-game season. Baseball to me is a bit of a rhythm sport. So
yeah.
There's a lot of time left for Bryce Harper to come back and make that deal not just good but great. If he goes and wins a couple more, you know, two or three titles down the road, I think it could be seen as one of the best values as we see the numbers for TV revenues just continue to increase.
Two or three titles.
Yeah, and I'll agree with you there just because the fact it takes 60 games for teams to get into a rhythm, let alone play a 60-game season. You know, teams aren't hitting their mark until about then. So I agree with that.
You brought up Bryce Harper. You were saying Bryce Harper could, like, that deal could work out for Philadelphia if he wins two or three World Series down the line here. Is he leaving Philadelphia to win those World Series? Because he's not winning them in Philly.
No, he ain't, because they have to build a team. They
exactly.
have to build a team down there. I just don't know what they're doing in Philly. I think they're going to be on the bottom of that division. We said it a couple days ago. But, I mean, I know, Nate, I know you had some topics you wanted to throw out in the kitchen. Let's throw the buffet around. Everybody get a plate, and we're going to eat off of whatever Nate and Dave got cooking for us.
Sure. I'm going to kick it off by I want to address this extra innings rule. We saw three games go to extra innings today. We had the Yankees game go extra innings. You had the Braves game go extra innings. And then you had the Twins game go extra innings. So I'm going to start with the Yankees game here. First of all, the Yankees ran themselves out of that game. The contact play is the worst play in baseball. Why on earth that guy was taken off from third base with DJ LeMahieu at the base? Why at the bat? Why he was going on contact?
Talkman.
I would never understand. Yeah, Talkman, man, you got to either make sure that ball gets through, or you make sure the guy commits to first base because you're on third base with less than two outs. You got that
in
running that contact play. I will never understand.
In defense of Talkman, I don't think he called the play. The way the Yankees operate, they do what the numbers tell you to do. Somebody with a spreadsheet out there said that's the play. You look. I don't even think he even looked after the pitch was thrown and there was the slightest sound of contact. He ran.
Oh no, you're spot on. Like that was put on by the manager, and I'm totally putting that at the feet of the manager. You can't run the contact play there. You got to win that game. Like DJ LeMahieu, who's at the mat, like. At the very least, you make them, you know, you make the third baseman think about it for a minute. Am I going home or am I going to first? And that thought, at least you then can maybe have DJ LeMahieu beat out the throw.
I don't know.
Or Hoffman can force the issue.
I don't know. You have to trust your guy. It's the first game of the season. You just gave DJ all the money. He's right there in the big spot. You have to trust the guy who led the league with runners in scoring position to make good contact in that play. At that point, is it worth an out almost to run the contact play? I would assume the numbers say it is. So I know you're crushing it, but I think you're playing to win. You're playing aggressively. You know, if you don't score the next inning, they'll come with a guy already on second. And all you have there is a guy in third. That's it. That's the only difference between the automatic runner on second. So I don't hate the move.
If they don't do the contact play, like if you know, if the manager doesn't put that on and Tauchman freezes instead of going home, I think he forces the third baseman when he fields the ball to make a decision. So either DJ LeMahieu is then going to be safe, or even on a late break, Tauchman can score and the game's over. You don't go to extra innings. But we started this with the extra innings rule, which I think – I do not like the new extra innings rule, but more so than not liking the new extra innings rule, I hate how some of these managers are managing the extra innings rule. And I'm going to jump to the Braves game as the example. The Braves, you know, they started the 10th. They have the man on second, and the first thing they do, the first guy comes up and he lays down the bunt to bunt him over, and they didn't score. Phillies come up in the bottom of the inning. They get a single, run scores, game over. Braves, you basically threw the game away because you gave up the free out with the bunt to get a guy on the third base and then you couldn't get him in. If you're the visiting team, you need to put up as many runs as possible. One run might win it, but it's not guaranteed because it's just as easy for the home team to win it. I think if you're the home team, you can play for the one run, assuming that you don't let them score in the top of the inning. But to play for one run in the top of the inning with this new rule, I think is I don't get why so many managers are playing that way.
I would absolutely do it, what the managers are doing. You play to get that one run, and then you have three arms in your bullpen, you have three outs to just not let them move the runner over. If you can get your runner in and you can stop them, the Yankees trust their bullpen. They always have. You know, even going back to when you had Mariano setting up Wetland, you know, you have to trust your bullpen to get those three outs. If you score one run, why are you paying the guys in the bullpen if they can't get, you know, three outs?
Yeah, I don't think anything is set in stone, though. Yeah. I think you're talking about who's pitching, who's batting, where are we in the order. I think all of that comes into play when guys make these decisions. And then, at the same time, you have to give your manager a little bit of breathing room for gut reactions, things he wants to do or things he just feels like are a good thing. So, I don't know. I think that's a little bit of resulting, where we're looking at the result and then saying, oh, this guy was wrong. But if it goes the other way, we say, oh, what a brilliant move by the manager. So, I don't know. I don't think you can do anything set in stone in that scenario. Running on second is not a guarantee of anything.
Look how many one-run games we had today, though. I mean, you know, the Yankee game was a one-run game. Milwaukee, Minnesota. I mean, Atlanta, Philly, Arizona, San Diego, Tampa Bay, Miami. Those are all one-run games. And what that says to me is if you have a chance to score one run and you're going to throw everything at it in the top of the 10th, you go for it.
I mean, the runner on second is, you know, I hate it, but I kind of like it because it does shorten the extra innings, because you can be stuck trying to get guys in, and these extra inning games can go to 18 innings. So while I hate the rule because it's like so little league to me, it's like T-ball, you know, putting a runner on second.
It's like having a pitcher's helper out there on the mound.
Exactly, but you know what? It does speed the game, and both teams get the shot with a runner at second base. Toronto got the guy in off the first, you know, batter, a double to right field. The Yankees had their chance and couldn't get the run in. I mean, and it was a contact play, but I mean, common sense, man. Like, I played baseball since I was 8, 9 years old. Runner on third base. Runner, if the ball's hit to third or first, you stay your butt at third. I mean, infield was drawn in. So it's tough because it's like if on contact with the infield drawn in, you want to go home and try to, you know, use your speed. But, I mean, that to me, that was just not a good baseball play. But, I mean, it's a contact play, and that's what they wanted to do.
Nate's original point was about the rule itself, right? So – you're not wrong with some of your assessments, not all of them, but some of them. What, you know, I think with the Yankees specifically, they're a home run team. So you're always going to have a runner on second. You're thinking, okay, one of these guys puts a good swing on it, it's an immediate two-run lead. But if you're looking at one of these teams like, let's go with Baltimore, for instance. If they were able to play and they had a runner on second, you know what they're not going to do? They're not going to put a guy out there who's going to try to knock in a home run and try to get two runs. They're going to fight for that one run. And, you know, we just had the point made up, brought up that it's situational. And, of course, you know, it's always going to be situational. That's one of the great things about baseball is, you know, you could have Mike Trout at the plate for the last, you know, at-bat, or he could just have, you know, the 25th man on the roster. I think the Yankees did exactly what they were scripted to do because they had a man on third, and it was specifically DJ LeMahieu. There might be only five guys in the entire league, I would say, run on the contact play. I'm going to die on this hill.
So I wanted to touch on something. Somebody mentioned that the runner on second doesn't mean anything, but the runner on, you know, a guy on third with one out is closer to scoring or something to that effect. I don't have the exact stat in front of me at the moment, but I have read before, runner on second base with no outs scores something like 10% more often than a runner on third base with one out. Like, they have run these statistical regressions and found that just moving that guy up and sacrificing him 90 feet, while it seems like it should work, it ends up with teams scoring at least one or more runs fewer times than if they just leave the guy on second base with no outs.
Well, that's common sense. That's common sense, Nate, because think about it. You move that, you give up an out to move that runner from second to third. What do you do next? You walk the guy that's coming up behind him, turn the double play, and get out of the inning. That's baseball.
Yeah, well, and this whole new rule, it just bugs me because you play nine innings under one set of rules, and then as you guys have kind of hit on, now we go into extra innings, and now we're playing situational baseball. Like, I hate that. I would much rather them do something similar to what the NHL does, where, you know, well, the NHL has kind of screwed up their own overtime, but, like, you know, they used to play a full overtime before they go to the situational play of the shootout. If they want to do this because of, you know, you want to avoid the marathon game and blowing out your bullpen with an 18-inning game, which didn't happen really all that often anyway, why not play the 10th and the 11th with regular rules, and then if you get to the 12th inning, okay, now we can throw the runner out there because now we're getting a little far afield.
So
that's
Nate,
fair. I mean,
I know you're. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I want to give Eric a shot to chime in too. Go ahead, real quick.
No, I was just going to say, you know, Nate, just a quick question for you: of the three quote unquote finishes in overtime, college football, baseball's runner on second, or shootout in hockey, how would you rank those as most egregious to the closest in you know, the least egregious, I suppose?
Ooh. So when we're talking hockey, I mean, we're just going with shootout. We're assuming that, you know, not including the overtime in there, because the fact that they'd play in overtime before going to the shootout, I find that's the least egregious.
I'm just talking about the shootout.
Yeah, okay. I guess in that case, with those three answers, I would go college football least egregious to hockey being the most egregious if we're just looking on the shootout. But I think baseball and hockey are kind of in the same vein. It's the exact same situation.
Wow, so a runner on second is just as bad as completely not playing hockey. Okay. All right, now I know we wanted to give Eric a shot, so I'll hand it off.
Yeah, you know, I agree with everybody here. If it's not broke, don't fix it. I could see the reasoning behind it, but like you just touched on, this wasn't happening all the time, and it's a part of baseball. That's just the part of baseball. I mean, that's one of the beauties of baseball. The game goes until there's a winner. So I liked it, and I think the players liked it too. I don't know if too many players were complaining. I know maybe management and some of the GMs, because these guys are assets, and the longer they go, the risk of injury and, you know, blown out your arms and blown out bullpens, so the next game you play, you don't have too many options out there. But it was not happening at a consistent basis. So I like what was just thrown out there. Maybe, you know, if we get I'm even up to saying let's wait until 13 or 14 innings to put this runner out there, because it kind of hinders the game of baseball. You know, you got your, especially if it's the home team, then the away team gets screwed kind of, because they don't really get a chance, because the first, that run's going to score. So, I don't know. I just don't I don't like it. I think they should have just left it where it was or maybe incorporated something in the 14 innings. But, yeah, so I don't like the rule change. If it's not broke, don't fix it. There's no need
to. Well,
it's
a poorly.
Yeah,
it's
but we got to be careful. Yeah, but we got to be careful. Like, I know there's some, you know, things we want to guard as far as the game, but there's also the aspect of the players that are playing now kind of make the game exist for tomorrow, but also the front offices and the people who are coming up with new rules and trying to bring the kids into the game. You can't have a game with a 50-year-old majority fan base. Like, you have to figure out ways to make your game better, optimize it for TV, optimize it for, you know, effects and highlight scenarios. Like, some of those things have to be done, and I know it's going to hurt the purity of baseball, but some of this stuff just has to be done. And as far as the previous point, sometimes with baseball we get a little too caught in the numbers and we run into a roulette problem. You walk in the casino, the roulette guy says, hey, look, black just hit five times in a row. You should take that in your calculus when you put down your bet. No, you shouldn't. So same thing with baseball, man, as far as this scenario. All variables are not created equal, meaning Bryce Harper at the plate is not Chris Davis at the plate. So scenarios should change with each situation based on the variables you have at bat and, you know, who's throwing the ball. So it can't be as simple as saying, well, you know, 60% of the time from second scores X or from third scores Y. It can't be that simple because we're still talking about humans and the behavior. It throws all numbers out of whack when you're dealing with people. So that's the tough part.
Thank you. And that is exactly why you run the contact play with DJ LeMahieu at the plate. Just the point I wanted to hear.
Fine. Contact play, yeah, run it. It didn't work. So what? We lost. Listen, you know what it is, though? I agree with you, Nas. You bring up a great point, Nas, because the game is not the most exciting of the big three. It's probably the least exciting, okay? Basketball is a little bit more exciting. Football, obviously, is king. Baseball is making a lot of money, but is not as exciting, especially to the youth. Like, look at the decline in African-American players in baseball from when I was a kid in the late 80s till now. It's drastically different. And why? Because those kids don't feel baseball is boring, and they're gravitating to football and basketball. So I don't think there's a lot of ways to make the game more exciting that ruins the purity of the game, but I think something like this, with putting a runner on second, kind of helps with the scoring. And I think, and I agree with Nate's point, hey, let's put a guy at second after maybe the 12th inning, or, you know what I mean? Like, give it an inning or two to try it the old-fashioned way, and then let's put a runner on there, just kind of saying, all right, you guys are stalling. Let me jump start you guys to get you to win this game. I think like that, instead of starting it right away, I kind of vote for that.
So, Barry, I got to say, One question I have for you is you brought up the other sports and their quote-unquote incitement factor. One thing you often see is that in the NFL or in a football game is only, you know, a condensed amount of actual action. Like, each play only has, you know, 6 seconds of action or 10 seconds of action.
Mm-hmm.
In baseball, to me, what I've gathered over the last couple things I've heard here are you want that moment, right? You want that moment where you're sitting on your couch and you have your eyes on the TV and you can't look away. And that's when the runner's on second. You sit down on your couch, you know, after getting a snack to start the extra innings, and the first thing you hear is the crack of a bat. And it's not just, oh, cool, we got a guy in first or we got a guy in second. A crack of a bat in the extra innings of the man on is instant excitement. And I think that is one thing I can say happened today when I sat down for those extra innings. It was immediately, I can't miss it now. I can't, you know, one pitch,
right.
Understanding, you know, one pitch could be a home run, but it immediately goes from a one-run home run to a two-run home run, which is dramatic. So I think they've achieved that. I do want to agree with the others and everybody saying that, you know, do the 10th and 11th inning naturally and then throw the runner on second and the 12th. I think that's a perfect compromise.
Absolutely. I think that's fair.
It still bugs me that we were looking for a solution to it. It still bugs me that we were kind of looking for a solution to a very rare, almost non-existent problem.
That's a good point.
Well, that's the name of baseball.
They may revisit it and get back to what you guys are saying. So, I mean, sounds like a good solution to me.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, I listen, for the first year that they did it, Naj, I think it kind of worked. And I think putting a runner at second base in extra innings kind of accomplished, especially in a shortened season, I think it kind of accomplished what they wanted, and it did bring some excitement. And it did, you know, they're all about quickening the pace of the game, like the timer, the mound visits, all those little tweaks that they've done to the game that I don't think has robbed us of the purity, but it's kind of quickened the pace a little bit. So, and it, to your point, Dave, the game within the game, now a runner on second, every pitch is important. You're hanging on to every, you know, every kind of pitch, every move, every, you know, throw over to second, you know, every, you know, okay, a 2-1 count, you know, now you have to come with a fastball, you know, a 3-0 count, you know, it's all that kind of stuff. So I do like it.
The game within a game is always fascinating to me. Like every pitch is, to me, a great thing. I personally love low scoring games. If I'm going to a game at the stadium, you know, then I'd be more inclined to see, you know, a 6-7 game or something like that. But if I'm at home and watching it on TV, I have to admit, I do love a good, you know, 2-1 game or even, you know, 0-1, because as you get, you know, closer to the 4th, 5th, 6th innings, then every pitch becomes that much more critical. And nowadays, you have the pitchers and their pitch counts, and you have to really wonder when the managers are going to take these guys out. There's more strategy involved with the pitching changes and the way the roster sizes are, and you know, how much you've been seeing guys get called up and sent down. And granted, I think that's more of a problem with teams that have a deep 40-man roster as opposed to you know, some franchises which may not have invested in their youth properly.
Right.
Yep.
Absolutely. So we got about a little under 15 minutes left. Nate, I know you had another topic you want to throw out there so that we all can eat off of. What do you got for us, bro?
Actually, I think Dave had the other topic.
Dave, fine.
I'm gonna take
Dave,
it over him.
You know. Okay, David.
So one thing I wanted to bring up was, you know, the whole reason we had this conversation about the runner on second, it was a negotiation tactic. Nobody really wanted it, it seemed like, but this was part of the negotiation with the universal DH, and it seemed like, you know, you can't have it all, and if, you know, you go with one rule, you're going to have to sacrifice another rule. And I think not having a DH in both leagues is not just problematic, it's troubling. I don't understand why I understand why we have pitchers hitting, because that's what we used to do. But that's the only reason I can come up with. Whenever it comes to pitchers hitting, it seems like a waste of an out. You get 27 outs in a game, Nate had done the math on this, but, you know, you're giving away, you know, over the course of a season, if you say that's 3 outs a game, you total that up across, you know, 162 games. You're practically giving games away just by having an empty hole in your lineup. For, you know, remember when Bartolo Colon hit that home run and everybody thought it was the, you know, most hilarious thing ever, and it was everywhere and it went viral? Well, it went viral because it doesn't happen. It shouldn't be that way. If you're going to have pitchers hit, have them hit. Don't just have them be a reason to go to the bathroom a little bit earlier when their spot comes up in the 4th inning of a game you're at. I don't know. I'm all for the DH in both leagues. The only downside for that, I think you would really make the game seem or shift even more towards a power game, where you see like what the Yankees are doing and saying, hey, who cares if we strike out? Just so long as we hit like 3-4 home runs with maybe a guy on, we're going to win. You know, then you start having to looking at rules to counter and give the defense an advantage, or maybe pitchers an advantage. But I'm all for the universal DH, and I really think you look at a guy like, to go way back, Mark Pryor. I mean, we could be talking about him being one of the best pitchers of the last, you know, 15, 20 years, but the guy hurt himself rounding the bases. I mean, that's, you know, I believe Chin Meng Wong had a very promising career ahead of him.
Yeah, that's my guy. Yeah. In Houston, running the home plate. Eric, I'll come to you. What do you think about the universal DH?
I think it's a good idea because I'm on the fence. You either have pitchers bat in both leagues or you have DH bat in both leagues. It just makes it fair. I never understood why you know, is like the American League has an advantage by having that DH, you know, because we all know pitchers aren't that great of hitters. So it's almost a guaranteed out when a pitcher gets up. I mean, you can almost bank on it. So I'd like to see him either go one way or the other. You know, I'm all for the universal DH.
Naj, what do you think about the universal DH in baseball? Are you for it or against it?
Oh, I'm for it. I think you guys are 100% right, man. I'm tired of all the rally-killing, raggedy at-bats, terrible bunting attempts, and basically easy out for the other pitcher. Like, why not upskill the game and have the person face another professional hitter? And then the other part is just the risk of injury that's brought up. Like, pitchers are so important to the game of baseball. Like, your season can change immediately. Ask the Atlanta Braves. We lost Soroka last year. Everything changes when a pitcher goes down. So why even put him at you know, further risk?
Absolutely. We don't pay pitchers to hit. We pay them to pitch, right? We don't call them pitcher/hitters. We call them pitchers. Nate, what are you
telling me?
About
you're scared to let them throw 100 pitches, but you want to put them in the box with somebody throwing 98?
That's right. That's right. 99, we're good. 100? Nate, what do you think about the universal DH?
So I'm in line with Eric in that I could be perfectly fine either way, either have the pitchers hit in both leagues or have the hitters hit in, or just put a DH in both leagues. I think it's crap that we have two leagues with two different things. And, you know, Eric kind of started touching on the history and like how it's crap that this whole developed this way. And the reason it developed that is that this was supposed to be experimental back in the 70s. And it was proposed by the Players Association and the hardline old schoolers, which, you know, that's a running theme of tonight. It'll be a running theme of every baseball show that's ever out there, because that's always the theme, the way we used to do it versus how do we change it to make it better. But, you know, they got the pushback, and so the compromise was, okay, we'll put the DH just in the American League. And the idea was it was supposed to get more offense into the game, and it was just supposed to extend careers of guys like Tony Oliva and some of these and Harmon Killebrew, these guys who were, you know, they were aging out of being able to be effective defenders, but they still could swing the bat. And then, you know, the league just kind of let it fester to where we're at now. And I just think it would be silly to not have a uniform rule, and to unify it, you almost basically have to put it in both leagues now, because they're not going to take that away from the American League. It's so ingrained now. It's been there for 50 years at this point. Like, okay, well, you're not going to undo that. And the argument against the universal DH that I always hear that drives me insane is, oh, well, it takes away from the management aspect of the National League.
Yep.
And that's a bunch of crap. Dave brought up the numbers, and, you know, yeah, I'd rather have any manager that can work his way through an American League roster and actually has to negotiate 27 outs. He has to get 27 hitters out every game instead of a guy that only has to get 24 outs a game, knowing that he's got a pitcher coming up. And the other, I mean,
they could always threaten you with a pinch hitter, Nate.
Right. Exactly. And then, okay, so now the National League manager, oh, yeah, there's so much excitement out of a pitcher bunting, or there's so much excitement out of the double switch. Everybody's waiting for the double switch to happen in every National League game. That's what I go to the ballpark to see. Like, it's an empty, hollow argument. And your pitcher's going to come up. You're either going to have him bunt, which nobody cares. He's going to be a free out and kill the rally, or you pinch hit, and now, okay, I'm taking my ace out in the fifth inning because otherwise I'm going to lose the chance to get the lead, and now I got to turn to my bullpen, which, you know, if you're the Philadelphia Phillies, okay, you just lost the game because your bullpen's terrible. So I don't see how the National League can really argue that it's a bad thing for the DH to come in.
Yeah, it's just two different ways to manage a baseball game. Like, I'm for it. I like the DH. I'm an American League guy. But I also grew up a National League guy watching with my father and my grandfather. So I understand where they come from, the purists come from with the double switch, the manager having to, you know, negotiate and, you know, you're getting a free out. So, like, the eighth hitter, you know, you can walk him, get to the pitcher, get that out, get out of the inning, stuff like that. There's all those little tweaks. And then also building the bench so that you have pinch hitters, but you really don't have a pinch hitter in the national, in the American League, I mean, because they don't really get to hit. They really come off the bench to run, or they come off the bench maybe for defensive purposes late in the game. And in National League, they got to come in for defense and be able to hit for the pitcher in the nine hole. So it's just a different way of the game. But I look at it like this. Bringing the DH in both leagues brings an extra roster spot to a team, an extra player that can, you know, stay in the league. Edgar Martinez
Jobs.
Isn't in the Hall of Fame if he wasn't a DH. You understand what I'm saying? He doesn't have a job if he wasn't a DH because he couldn't play in the field effectively. David Ortiz, you know, was a first baseman by trade, but later in his career became one of the greatest DHs of all time. He doesn't stay on a team if he doesn't, if there isn't a DH. So I always look at it like there's an extra roster spot, an extra player that gets paid salary because of the DH. Now, in the National League, you still have a job because you're dependent on Moore to come in and pinch hit and play. But, you know, now you're I say, listen, if you bring in the DH, expand the roster by one spot. That's kind of where I'm at with it. Like, give each team one extra spot. That DH is that extra spot. And now, you know, it's giving an extra job because they can pay for it. The money's there. So that's kind of where I'm at. But I agree with the panel. I like the DH. I think I do not go to the ballpark to see Noah Syndergaard hit, even though he can hit home runs, or Jason DeGrom hit. I don't really care. I'd rather see, you know, a player that can hit. And, you know, it gives a guy like Stanton a chance to play because he can't play in the outfield with the outfield they have in place, but now he's a DH every day. You can rest guys. They don't have to play in the field as much as a long, grueling season, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
You're also extending the – you're also extending the lifetime of certain guys, like you brought up Stanton. You're also making the Albert Pujols contract, which is just intolerable. At least he can play. Imagine if he was on a National League team. They can't even do that. That's a contract you just simply can't offer as a National League franchise. You look at what he's doing. He can at least show up and maybe contribute. You know, he was able to show up and contribute towards the end there, and I think Edgar Martinez is always my favorite example. But, yeah, to me, that's a whole other part of it, is you have that magic potential of it's like having a veteran slot receiver. You know, he doesn't need to do the whole thing, but if he can just show up and catch a pass at the right time, it's gold.
Absolutely, absolutely. But, you know, we're at the tail end. I see, you know, that we're scraping at the bottom of the buffet here to get some food up. You know, we're eating so much. You know, an hour goes fast, boy. So I'm going to kick it around, get closeouts, and the first edition season, the first season episode, season premiere, I guess we could say, of the Baseball Buffet. So, Nas, thank you for calling in from the 404. Give me a closeout and a plug, and thanks for joining us, brother.
Yeah, I guess the plug would be shout out to Sports City Chef, shout out to the Villain, shout out to Aaron, shout out to Timeless, shout out to everybody who comes on. And I guess my last baseball thing was I tried to protect the pitchers last time. Now I got to go at the pitchers. Look, man, 100 pitch counts are not going to kill people. Like you can increase pitch counts across the league. Like, I understand you have to be careful, but at least give them the chance to be great. Because let's be honest, with the way baseball is currently, it is impossible for anybody to win 300 games. Like, you are locking them out of a certain section of the Hall of Fame and greatness because they're not even given the opportunity to be great. So a little less caution. Let some of these guys throw, man.
Yeah, dude, I'm all about the Nolan Ryan era pitching, man. Let these guys pitch. And you know what? If I see Garrett Cole come out in the fifth, sixth inning again, I'm going to lose my shit. But thanks, Naja. We love you, man. Eric, Big E, Easy Money, give me a plug and a close.
Hey, great show, gentlemen. Enjoy talking baseball with you guys. You know, check us out, sportscitychefs.com. We're doing it. And everybody enjoy the wonderful, great baseball season that is ahead of us. Have a blessed night.
Absolutely, yeah. So, Nate and Dave, you know, your first episode, you guys, your feet are wet. Like I said, the training wheel protocol is coming off. You guys are – you're in the deep end of the pool, so congratulations. Nate, I'll come to you first. Give me a plug and close, and I know you got a little tidbit for me today.
Well, we can start off with that. Can you name the – in 1966, the Orioles swept the Dodgers in four games to win the World Series. Do you know the four winning pitchers?
Come on, please. I wasn't even born. I know one was Jim Palmer, right?
That is correct.
Exactly. Okay, that's the only one I know.
Well, you know what? Because I'm doing the blog post, this will be a way to kick it over to the blog post. The answer to the trivia question will drop in the next blog post. How about that? So we can do a little teaser on that one.
Ooh, I love absolutely. I'll be waiting. I like the article, man. It was really good. So give me a plug, Nate.
Yeah. SportsCityChefs.com. Check it out. Dave and I will be here every week, 8 Central, 9 o'clock Eastern, taking you baseball all the way through the season. Check out the great stuff that's going to be up on the blog site. Stay here for the radio. And to borrow a quote from Adam Jones, former Oriole great center fielder, stay hungry.
Exactly. Stay hungry. Dave, great job today. Give me a plug and close, bro.
We love to hear it. Thank you for joining us here on Sports City Chefs. Baseball Buffet is something we've been working on for a little while here, and really excited to bring this to you. My boy Nate and I will be here every week, 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central. We've got a whole bunch of fun segments coming up, talking about things like sports movies, baseball movies, some of the things that we've loved as kids growing up, the home run chase, who should be in the Hall of Fame. And, of course, something Nate has really wanted to bring to the table is talking about food at all the ballparks. So we got a whole bunch of fun things to come. But I want to sign off by kind of changing some words on Vin Scully's last thing that he said on air before he signed off. This is Dave Jets wishing you a very pleasant good afternoon, wherever you may be.
I love it. My favorite baseball movie, The Natural. It gets me every time, my favorite movie of all time. For baseball-wise. So, but, yeah, check us out, sportscitychefs.com, the blogs, the interviews. We're doing big things. Go get the merch. I'm telling you, Nate and Dave, you better get your Sports City Chef shirt and mug. I got my mug right here. We'll have some new merch coming out soon. But to steal a line from the man himself, the owner, the cream of the crop, the creme de la creme, TP Timeless, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if you don't know...
Sports City Chefs, kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room, cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon, they well in tune, blown like a flower in June, Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom, so tell a friend it's the Sports City Chefs again, pay attention, tune in, we on the set again. Sports City, Chef, yeah, Cavs, Taj,
Connecticut,